It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of October. Mike Conley returns to form. Bojan Bogdanović was terrific. The Jazz defense still elite. We'll talk about all of those things, plus get you ready for the Phoenix Suns on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it a lot better for you to be a Jazz fan every single day. For those of you longtime Salt Lake City people, I will be having lunch with Ryan Hatch. How about that? So Ryan actually interned for me at 16 years old. He's now a bigwig out here in Arizona. So just for those of you that have been around for a long time and like to hear little stories like that, Ryan Hatch and I will be having a little lunch together. All right, let's talk about what we saw Saturday against the Friday and Saturday. We haven't done a show either. So Friday, the Jazz get thumped by the Lakers. The Lakers' defense is really good right now. Avery Bradley, Danny Green, as much as everyone talked about shooting, are elite-level defensive players. They're blowing up the pick and roll. They're physically getting into you. They're blowing up the handoffs. And the Jazz offense looked really poor, and Mike Conley had another bad game. And Bojan Bogdanović didn't play. And the Jazz just could not score. I mean, they had just an awful, awful offensive outing. And it's not that uncommon, frankly. We've had 15 other offensive outings in the last three seasons that were that bad. Five of them have happened in October, which if you think about how rarely we play in October is telling. Five of them have happened in November. One of them has happened in December. Two of them happened in February. One happened the day after the All-Star break, and the other one happened the second day after the All-Star break. One happened in the playoffs, and one happened in April. And when you run a read-based offensive system like the Jazz do, then you end up in a circumstance where, particularly with new pieces, against a team that blows you up for the first time the way they did, that you look bad. And that's just been a part of kind of what Quinn Snyder's teams are and who they are, in that it takes a while for the offense to completely understand itself, know how to react to things, experience things, and thus early in the season, they have a tendency to have some bad offensive games. So this team's more potent offensively, so it should happen less, and it happened less 2 years ago when the same team came back together. It only happened twice. It happened once against Memphis and once against Dallas. So, you know, I think that it was ugly and Friday was bad offensively, but that is – there's kind of a pattern that happens, and it probably will happen, you know, another time in another two times before we hit December for this Jazz team. The defense was great in that game, and we'll talk about that coming up. But what also was going on was that Mike Conley wasn't right. And, you know, that might have been the item that I think had a lot of people the most disturbed, is that, you know, Mike Conley, after the second game, was driving the lane and losing the ball, and he really looked just completely 100% out of sorts. Quinn Snyder at shoot-around the next day basically told Mike to go get the basketball. Like, this is your team. Lead us. Organize us. You know, it's your team and others, but do what you need to do. It's why we brought you here. Stop being such a good teammate. Mike, after the first two games, was 4 of 27 shooting and basically said, go get the ball. And if you looked at it, what was taking place was that Mike actually just was playing such a considerably different role than what he had done in Memphis. I think it had just completely undone him. So if you dig in a little bit on some of Mike's numbers in the first two games of the season, what you see is he went from taking three shots in the restricted area to 0.5. He'd taken one. He got to the rim three times in the next game. His mid-range shots were actually down, which is fine in theory. Everything was just off. He had gone from running 31 pick and rolls a game to running 25. The next part of it gets really interesting. And that was just how much he actually was touching the basketball. So in the first two games of the Jazz, he touched the ball 50 times. And in Memphis last year, he touched the ball 83 times a game. Front court touches went from 38 to 21. And then the interesting one to me is he actually, when he had the ball, he actually had spent more time holding the ball than so when he got the ball, he was had some indecisiveness and was holding the ball longer than he did in Memphis. Maybe knew he wasn't, you know, just wasn't comfortable. The real number, the best way to say this, is that in Memphis, if you assume that he spent the same amount of time both on offense and defense, he had the ball in his hands 40% of the time he was on offense. 40% of the time. The first two games, he was at 32%. So, that's, you know, it's a 25% drop, or 20% drop. It's pretty considerable. And for a player, it must feel really strange. So Quinn basically said, hey, go get the ball. After makes, bring the ball up the court. After misses, we can push, but, you know, get the ball. And you saw that change in Sacramento. Sacramento's awful. They look disorganized. They don't look like they have an understanding of what they're doing defensively. They don't look like they're together at all. And so I'm not sure they're a great standard. But the flip side of that is Mike Conley had the ball 40% of the time he was on the floor in that game. There are multiple impacts to this. One of the most interesting is what it's going to do for Donovan. And so what that is that Donovan Mitchell had the ball in his hands 14.5% of the time. So if you think about that, just that they're equal offense and defense, so 29% of the time offensively last year. When so far this year, he's had the ball in his hands 24%. Again, it's like a 20% change. Now, again, we need to keep an eye on Donovan and make sure that he's all right and that, you know, he still feels engaged. But I think what Donovan's really going to feel is just much less burden and much less fatigue than he did a year ago. He's down about 4 pick and rolls a game. He's up in his transition. His drives are down. His shot selection's almost the same, except for he's taking a few less threes. He's crazy efficient right now. Right? He's been absolutely terrific through 3 games. Donovan Mitchell, and did I mention Donovan Mitchell offseason efficiency enough for everyone? Donovan Mitchell, 59% from the field, 50% from 3, and 93% from the line so far this year in 3 games. So that's kind of what I think the big story out of Sacramento was. The other one was Bojan Bogdanović. We'll touch on that and the Jazz defense as when we continue. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy is located in Woods Cross, also up in Logan. I'm driving the Chevy Blazer right now. I thought it was cool. I really liked it. And then my son drove it the other day. His regular car was in the shop. And Murdoch's, yes, I had the 16-year-old drive this. I trusted him. He came back. He's like, I really like it. It's really solid. It's quiet. I actually got going too fast. I was like, yeah, that's not great. I didn't really need to hear that. But it does kind of reconfirm everything I've told you about the Blazer. Really well made. Really solid. Feel like you've got a good capsule. Very customer, easy to use, kind of driver friendly on all the controls. Great sizing for 2 rows of seats and a huge back trunk area. It's just a redo of the classic Blazer that once was Chevy. It's what Chevy is 90 plus years in the state. You know the great SUVs, the Suburban and the Tahoe, the Equinox, now the Blazer, all there for you, and the trucks, the Silverado and the Colorado. Head out to Murdoch Chevy, located in Woods Cross and in Logan, say out of Ben, while you're there, and take advantage of the Murdoch's no-regret policy and Chevy's incredible lineup of cars and trucks right now. Actually, My boss, Jeremy Castro, said he was looking at the possibility of a Chevy Blazer after seeing this one as well. So it's catching people's eye. It's a pretty sweet car. Bojan Bogdanovic. Scott Rogers told me this. I had not seen this note. Bojan Bogdanovic in the post game the other day made the comment that, man, everything I'm getting is wide open. And so far, the Jazz are a little low on their numbers on catch and shoot. So the Jazz overall have right now the sixth fewest catch and shoot threes a game at 18.7 a game. Way too low. But the Jazz are the seventh best team making them. There's some unnatural numbers across the league right now that will cool down a little bit. But so the Jazz are not getting a lot of it. Might have been because Bojan didn't play a game. But Bojan afterwards was like, wait a sec, every single one of my shots is open. It's incredible. And you start looking at the catch and shoot numbers overall, and he's not near the leaders. Eric Gordon is taking 10 a game. He's only hit 26%. Bojan's taking six in each. He's taking the sixth most amount of catch and shoots so far. So right now it's Bojan that's getting those catch and shoots and almost nobody else. In his two games, he's actually the fifth most. Karl Anthony Towns has taken seven. Kristaps Porzingis has taken seven. Lauri Markkanen is taking seven. How about that for an interesting state of where the game is? The three of the four leaders in catch and shoot attempts are basically seven footers. Karl Anthony Towns, Kristaps Porzingis, Lauri Markkanen, Chris Middleton, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Al Horford are all next. Kind of crazy. Al Horford is only hitting 23% of his. Bojan is at 39% of his. But we saw the array of scoring mechanisms by Bojan Bogdanovic. And what I mean by that is Bojan Bogdanovic drove to the basket. He came off a pick and roll, and then he had great, great catch and shoot. So you saw the different aspects of what he can do with this team. He is also fifth in the league or sixth in the league in open catch and shoot. So he's gotten wide open or wide open threes. He's got 4.5 wide open threes a game so far. Eric Gordon, Wesley Matthews, Karl Anthony Towns, PJ Tucker, Buddy Hield, Kyle Lowry. Buddy Hield didn't get him against us. Are the guys that are getting the most wide open threes in the league. That's why he came. And has to be pretty ecstatic about getting those threes early on and seeing that from him. The other big question about the Jazz this year was whether or not they were going to be an elite defensive team. So through three games, they're the number one defense in the league. More importantly to me, through three games, they've held the opponent under 100 points a possession, or 1 point a possession, 100 points a game. And the reason that's a big deal for me is because I really look at that as the standard of excellence. And to me, the question was going to be whether or not the Jazz could still dominate a game the way they used to dominate games. So over the last year, 46% of the games the Jazz played, they held their opponent to under a point of possession. This is going to be the standard. When you hold a team under a point of possession, you win 88% of the time. 88% of the time. Now, you can take it even further, and the Jazz had their fifth in the last two seasons. The Jazz have done that 46% of the time. In the last two seasons, the defensive performances were the fifth best, the 26th best, and the 56th best defensive performances. When you have your defensive rating under 90, teams won 97 out of 99 games last year. So, you know, on what the Jazz put out defensively on Saturday against Sacramento was just domination. And again, Sacramento was terrible. But the Jazz actually have held both Oklahoma City and Sacramento to below 90 and held the Lakers to 95. And as I said, you win 97 out of 99 games when you allow, when the defensive ranking is below 90. I mean, we can keep doing this. It's pretty interesting, actually, of where the breaking point is, where you just, you know, it almost is impossible for you to lose in certain outings. And people don't talk, you know, this is my big point, is people don't talk about defense nearly the way they do offense. And yet, you know, a dominating defensive performance is equally as valuable as there is a dominating offensive performance. And so that's what we're trying to see with the Jazz. We think they can put out some dominating offensive performances as well this year, and we'll be able to do that. And the other night was a pretty good one. They were at 110, so your 10 points, they put up together both. That's how you win by 32 points. If you keep the opposing team under 95, which we've done in almost every game, we're at 95.4, you win at a stunning rate. I believe it's 221 of 225 games last year. 221 of 225 games if you can keep your opponent to a 95. Now that's quite nice. That's 98% win rate. Like, you're going to win. And we actually almost, the Laker game, we were at a 95.4. So the defense has been able to be as good in the early parts of the season. Now, defense is traditionally ahead of offense. And so that could be a little bit of it. There's some interesting aspects to it. You know, some of the things we wondered about were whether or not the Jazz would have the same defensive rebounding, whether the Jazz would still force turnover. You know, the Jazz have never been a huge turnover forcing team, and things like that. What the Jazz have done really so far is their shot defense has been great. In all three games, they forced a ton of turnovers against Sacramento. We're middle of the pack against LA and Oklahoma City. Their defensive rebounding was bad against LA. LA's pretty mammoth, with Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and Anthony Davis. And it was good against Oklahoma City, and then they didn't foul against Sacramento after fouling too much. But really, they're doing it the old traditional way of defense. And the other thing they're doing is the shot frequency defensively, which is, I think anyone who's followed me knows I am a huge believer in, has been amazing. So listen to some of these numbers. The Jazz are allowing the second fewest amount of shots at the rim. Interestingly, the Rockets, who are not very good defensively right now, are allowing the fewest. The Clippers are allowing the third fewest. Milwaukee, as we expected, and will probably lead the league of the fourth. So number one, the Jazz allowing the second fewest amount of shots at the rim. They've forced 42% of opponent's shots as mid-range shots, which is the best in the NBA by a large margin. Jim Boylan's doing the exact opposite. He's just letting people get to the rim, which seems a little weird. 42% of opponent shots are in the mid-range. Philadelphia, with their long defense, is next. Brooklyn after that. And then from a three standpoint, the Jazz are allowing the second fewest amount of threes in the NBA. So shot distribution right now from a defensive standpoint, which I have kind of been preaching on the show for a while and a big believer in, and actually believing it's equally to, if not more important than offensive shot distribution, has been amazing. Offensive shot distribution is a problem, and the Phoenix Suns will be too. Homey is revolutionizing the real estate market and changing the way we do things around real estate, which is great because, frankly, it's been the exact same for a really long time and needed a shakeup. And why did it need a shakeup? Because real estate agents were taking 6% of all sales, 3% each. And as the real estate world changed, 3% each, which you ended up not, the real estate prices changed for everyone else. And so therefore, you know, real estate agents doing the same amount of work were making more and more and more money. So we've talked to you a lot about how Homie will sell your home for you for $1,500, just a set price. You don't get penalized for having the best house or the nicer house in the neighborhood or doing a great job on your remodel. Why should somebody else get more money because you did those things right? It's actually probably less work rather than more work for a nice house. Well, they also will help you buy a home now, and they'll try to get you $5,000 back. That's right, Homie will let you hire an agent. They'll find your dream home, tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deals, and work for you to get $5,000 back. So go to homie.com or text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. An experienced local Homie agent will help you every step of the way. All right, so Phoenix is good. The biggest change between Phoenix and how they've gone from being so terrible a year ago to good now is simply that they have most of their players are rotational NBA players. So I always call it the 240-minute rule. You got to look at a team and figure out, do they have 240 minutes of NBA players? And if Emmanuel Mudiay turns out to be a rotational player in the NBA, then the Jazz have 240 minutes of NBA minutes. Or if Dante comes back and is healthy enough to play. I think that's the one spot on our roster where you're not sure yet. So really, Phoenix is pretty similar. Like, their backup point guard, Javon Carter, might or might not be a rotational player in the NBA. But otherwise, they're tough. And DeAndre Ayton's injury, I think, makes them tougher. Because Aron Baynes is starting. He can shoot the three a little bit. Not great at 29%. But he is running around the outside as this mammoth human being setting monster picks with an open floor and free. Like, you freeze the game tonight, there'll be no Jazz defenders in the middle of the paint on numerous occasions. And that, it's going to be a tough defensive night because Frank Kaminsky will play some center. And that'll bring Ed Davis and Rudy Gobert out of the middle, and Frank's been very good. Frank had a good second half of the season last year. I tweeted out that I would consider Frank Kaminsky, and people kind of mocked me a little bit. But Frank actually has kind of figured out what he is as an NBA player. He should not have been a ninth pick, I don't think. But as a backup center, or maybe even they'll play Kaminsky and Saric together, and Saric can shoot the three a little bit. So now you have five shooters on the floor. It's a tough matchup for teams to deal with. Defensively, they move, they shift, they're playing hard, they have a plan, they're well put together, unlike Sacramento. So this is not going to be an easy one for the Utah Jazz at all. And Booker can score it. He's not a shooter like everyone thinks it is. He's a scorer. And Kelly Oubre is a driver, creator, open floor, 13-14 transition opportunities a game. And the Jazz are going to have to figure out how to deal with that. But I was very impressed with Phoenix just overall order, overall structure. I mean, it's really, quite honestly, we watched Phoenix against Sacramento in game one. Ron Boone and I always watch games on the plane. And the exact opposite was true in that game. Sacramento looked like a total mess. They still do. They're in crisis. And the flip side of that is Phoenix, who looked very organized and well put together. By the way, it'll be interesting. I haven't heard Hollinger and Duncan yet to see what things they touch on in today's program that is up and out there already. Sunday nights, they usually post Hollinger and Duncan, and then Rejecting the Screen will come your way tomorrow. Plus, Locked In NBA is your daily podcast for all things NBA. Watch for this set today. They'll run a play, which is really tough to guard. I don't know how you guard. They'll run it out of, let's say in this case, they'll run it out of the corner. So let's say if you're coming up the floor, it's on the left corner. And they'll pass to the wing to their big, who will then have a kind of dribble handoff with Devin Booker. Or it could be Kelly Oubre. I don't think they ran it with anybody else. And the big goes and sets dribble handoff pick for Booker, who's now come, or kind of almost a flip, who's now coming around to curl to the middle of the lane? Well, the easy answer is, well, the big, Rudy Gobert, would step out and cut off Devin Booker's drive. Like, that's the easy answer to it. Then the big, in almost all other cases, rolls down the baseline side on the baseline. So you have Booker coming kind of on the 45, and you have the big coming down the baseline, and Rudy just kind of drops with both of them, and the guard tries to get back out in front. But what the Suns do is they set that pick and then flare the big to the corner. So the guard is coming full steam the other direction, trying to follow Devin Booker. The pick gets set. They avoid the pick, probably in the case of Booker having to go over. And now the big heads out to the corner. It's even hard for the guard to get back to him. And then Rudy Gobert now is probably going to have to switch on to Devin Booker. Keep an eye on that. They also will just run a ton of Aaron Baines, you know, 4 and 5, 6 picks on a given possession. It's a lot. And so they're pretty good. We'll see if Ricky Rubio plays. He did not play the other day. He's listed as probable. And we'll see how the Jazz deal with that. So that's the setup for tonight. Ron and I will be with you. We'll be on the floor at 6. And then we will be postcast with you live. We'll do both those on Locked On Live and on Locked On Sports Live. Thanks very much. Follow me on Instagram at DLock09. Ron and I will give you the shoot-around report for that one, and we'll interactive questions for you that as well if we do it right on our Locked On, our Instagram story. So lots of stuff coming to you on a game day. Have a great one.